We just marked the date. February 28th was the signing of our letters of incorporation, and that was 100 years ago on that date. We kicked it off with our annual meeting and the launch of our new brand and logo at that annual meeting. So it was a really exciting kickoff, and there are things planned throughout the year, but the next one coming up is this Sunday, April 7th, and we will be doing a birthday party for the museum. It's a family fun event, and everyone is welcome, any age, and it's free and open to the public, so will the special exhibition be free that day as well. There will be entertainment all day on the stage in the Rose Auditorium. There will be a DJ and some surprises in the Great Hall, and then in the Gothic, there will be art experiences that families will be able to do together, and at 2 o'clock, we're having everyone come in to sing Happy Birthday to the museum, and we're trying to get all the guests in the museum together. It'll be a lot of fun. So there's going to be things to do throughout the day and pop-up things in the galleries as well. So a lot of fun down in the Experience Center too.
So the Art Institute has been in place as long as most people have been alive in this city. Tell me a little bit about how important an institution like this is.
Sure. We started as a school in downtown Dayton at the corner of Monument and Sinclair, and it grew from a school into collecting into what has been now a world-renowned Midwest collection of art with upwards of 26,000 objects from around the world. And when you have an institute like this, it really helps to set the tone for the cultural climate in a community. And you're right, it's been around for everyone, almost everyone's life in our community. And if you've lived here your whole life, you've had some experience at the Dayton Art Institute. So I think it creates great memories. It creates a great place to see beautiful objects. We hold those as treasures in the community, but we bring things in. But I also think we are a place where people gather to have dialogue or to have celebrations or to use our beautiful facility for their own events, weddings and life memorials or fundraisers. There's all types of different things that happen at the museum. Education is still a big part of our mission. And so we work hard to create programs that relate back to the collection or what's happening at the museum at that time.
A lot of people still talk about the original classes that took place here, and many say they took their art classes here. When exactly did that transition take place?
So you used to be able to get a four-year fine art degree at the Dayton Art Institute, and in 1974, they announced that they were closing the school, and there were a lot of reasons for that. The collection had grown that it was more of the focus of what this was about, the institute, but there were fine arts degrees available at UD and Wright State and Sinclair, and so it was becoming diluted, and the board and the director at that time had a tough decision and decided that we were going to be a museum that offered educational programs. And so they closed the school in 74. The last class graduated in 75. There's a lot of people that were very sad about that, obviously, but we have a lot of great friends that went to the school that are still engaged with us and have fond memories of the museum and want to see it succeed.
As director and CEO, you follow a long line of leaders who have led this institution into current times. Tell me how that transition has taken place and perhaps challenges over the years.
Yeah, there are certainly a long line of wonderful people that have helped lead this organization to where it is, and a lot of them have these special moments that you think about when you think of them. So Dr. Seaver, a woman director, one of the few women director, is credited with getting our Monet. So great history there. Tom Colt was a long director, 20 years, and he was known for building our European collection to what it is today, and it's magnificent. Bruce Evans was known for helping bring the Ponderosa collection, which is some of the finest mid-century art in the world, right to Dayton. And then Alex Nargis, who was here a long time, really did a lot to the building, completed the vision of it by adding the contemporary wing and the rotunda entrance. And then, you know, there's been other folks along the way that have been interim directors. And so those transitions happen often as people decide to retire or they go on to the next museum that they're interested in leading. Alex Nargis has been at the Virginia Museum of Art since he left here, and I see him often. And then we've had, you know, great people that have held it together in those transitions.
And also a tremendous staff and volunteers that work every day.
Right. We have a staff of about 45 5 part-time and 45 full-time, and they work really hard. We're a lean machine, but the output that this team is able to do is amazing, from educational programs to events to the curatorial staff that puts the objects out there, and then behind the scenes, you know, marketing and HR and finance. It's not a lot of people doing a lot of work. And so we're excited about the team that we have and taking us into the centennial. And we couldn't do it without our volunteers, as you mentioned. We have about 200 active volunteers throughout the year, and some of them are museum guides that help do tours and really study the collection. And then we have a group for Oktoberfest of over 2,000 volunteers that come in just for that event. So we really depend on them. And then, of course, our board and our associate board, who do a lot of heavy lifting around our events and our governance, those are all volunteer positions as well. So leaders in the community in their own right.
You mentioned curation, and you've got so many fine items in this museum. Can you tell me how that curation is approached and how you look for things that will appeal to the citizens of Dayton?
Sure. The museum's collection was built through a community of collectors who started collecting in certain areas and then donated them to the museum. Doesn't mean we don't once in a while purchase. We just don't have what we call large acquisition funds. So we count on collectors to help build it. And when we talk about encyclopedic, it means that we collect about everything that you would find in a museum, from European to American, photography, contemporary, African. And it's been built through the generosity of folks. And there's still a lot of wonderful people that are donating to the museum. We had some really big builds, you know, during the 50s and 60s and even in the 70s. But then then someone comes along like Jim Dickey, who is our biggest benefactor now, and has given large amounts of glass and contemporary American art. So we depend on those kind of things. Then our curatorial's job, our chief curator and his team, the job is to determine where our weaknesses are, where our strengths are, where we might have duplication, and really try and fill in those holes. We're at a time right now where our focus is really more about, when we're looking to collect, we're looking for people of color and diversity. And women artists, because we're lacking in that. So when we're looking, or if we have the opportunity to buy, we look and say, could we do something with those funds that fits that bill? We just recently brought two pieces into the collection, American artist, last name McKenzie, and it's one of the pieces, which is on view right now, is of an African-American couple in everyday life. We didn't have anything like that in the collection, so it's really nice. You want people to see themselves when they walk in. And that same artist gave us another piece. It's the first piece of a same-sex couple. It's two men. It's a beautiful piece. It'll be on view later in the year. But, you know, those are holes that are missing in audiences that are supporters of the museum, and everyone should see themselves here.
Art has the power to change lives, and I wonder if you have any anecdotal experiences of how that's taken place.
Yeah, we see it every day. I mean, you know, students coming in and kids that have never been to a museum and discover that spark where they find out they could be an artist or they could work in a museum. And we do see that. We have a program called the YEC program, which the YEC family made an endowment that helps it so students can come on scholarship, and they are then trained and helped mentored by college students who are artists. And those students in college get to have a show in our museum. I mean, that's life-changing for an artist to be able to say they've shown in a major Midwest museum. So we see that all the time. We see I have a benefactor who's become a friend and a donor who worked here, was a volunteer, worked here, met her husband here, then went on to be on the board, and is still actively involved. So I think, you know, needless to say, art has changed her life because she was present at the museum. We see it in our Tiny Thursday programs where kids have these moments. They can barely even talk, but they blossom in front of a piece of art. So I think sometimes we take it for granted because we're around it all the time, but I try and stop when I see a bus, when the RTA is bringing a bus of kids that have never been here and they're unloading. What could be being born right at that moment, either as an artist or someone who appreciates the art?
Last question, 100 years down, how do you look to the next 100 years for the Dayton Art Institute?
So, you know, we've been really working on this for several years, and it's here already. One of the main things we wanted to make sure we do is take care of the structure. The building itself that faces downtown and people see when they come in is art within itself. It's an Italian Renaissance design, and it needed a lot of care. So we're working on that in the front hillside, and people will see that evolve over the spring and summer and fall, and making sure that literally the house is in order. We've been trying to make it more accessible, so updating restrooms and spaces like that. Also caring for the collection. We've had a lot of pieces that have been under conservation in preparation for the centennial to go back out. And then, again, making sure that we have a team and that we're supporting a team. You know, it's a tough job market, and so we're trying to keep up with the pace of what it takes to run a museum. And then the big thing that we did two Octobers ago was to pay off $16.5 million in debt. It was my goal as we got into this year that the building be in the best shape it could be in, the collection, the staff, and that we were out of this debt. We're almost there. We have about $300,000 left to pay off of that original debt. And then it will be a new beginning. And I think for us, it's how do we level the playing field and make sure we're relevant going into the next 100 years? Because of museums have changed. Our communities changed. And so we have to be proactive and progressive about how we present art to the community and to be a space where people want to be and gather.
Michael Rediger, director and CEO with the Dayton Art Institute. Good luck with the weekend birthday celebrations coming up and the Art Institute.
Thank you. I enjoyed being with you and hope that we see all of your listeners at the museum soon.